Thank you very much for inviting me again. I spent a wonderful time with my sabbatical in 1996-1997, and since then I have been here quite often and I enjoyed every time, and particularly this time, of course, because this symposium and my talk is dedicated to Ramon, and at the very end of my talk I will come back to this one. Don't worry. Carbons, silylones, gamylones, stanylones. Let's start with carbons. On Monday, Matthias Dickelau talked about stable carbon compounds which have an unusual high coordination number. My talk focuses on stable carbon compounds which have an unusual low coordination number, and a class of compounds which has not been recognized, which is known for many years, but we think we have found that there is a class. Well, if you look for low coordination carbon compounds which are stable, then you associate it usually with carbenes. And carbenes nowadays are associated with Arduino compounds, with ulidanes, which were synthesized in 1991. And since then, it was realized, yes, carbenes can be put into a bottle. They are stable compounds. But the year 1991 is not the right year for saying that we had stable compounds. 3 years earlier, Bertrand made already this phosphonyl carbenes. But people didn't agree that this is a carbene and wrote it with a triple bond and said that's a phosphoalkene. And finally, Bertrand gave up and said, okay, if you say so, then it is. And only after Arduino showed that indeed carbene can be made, it showed that similar chemistry is exhibited by them, and now it is realized this is actually the birthday of carbenes. Well, they have one lone pair and use only two electrons for chemical bondings. The carbons which I'm talking about actually have two lone pairs and use none of the carbon electrons for chemical bonding, and the chemical bonding comes by donor-acceptor interaction between the strong sigma donor. And actually these compounds have already been made 40 years earlier than Arduino by Ramirez in a publication, but again, it was written in a different style. This is the original publication in JAX in 1961, and you see how they wrote it. With a double bond, they realized already with this mesomeric form that it should have, probably has a negative charge here, but this is a mesomeric structure which indicates electron sharing bonding. Well, that this bonding situation may not be appropriate comes to the fore when you look on the structure. The X-ray structure was only published 17 years later, when it was realized in 78 that the compound is actually significantly bent by about 132 degrees. This is our calculated value, which we published a few years ago. A few years ago was a starting point which my colleague Wolfgang Petz came to me and said, I have made an interesting compound where I bubbled CO2 through a solution of this carbodiphosphorane, and as a compound which I could isolate. It's not very stable, but it's stable enough to, at a low temperature, to get an X-ray structure, shows a remarkably short carbon-carbon bond, which is roughly 1.50 angstrom, shorter than a single bond, longer than a double bond. He said, what kind of bond is it? Well, we looked at it, and we just looked on the carbodiphosphorane compound, and then we immediately realized that something special is going on. Because the frontier orbital of the carbophosphorane, the HOMO, is a pi-type orbital, which is to more than 90% localized at the carbon. It's a lone pair orbital, and below you find the classical sigma lone pair orbital, also localized 90% at the carbon. This compound has two lone pairs at the carbon atom, and the carbon phosphorus bond comes from the donation of the lone pair of the phosphorus into the empty orbital of the carbon. This is the difference to a carbene, where in a carbene, at this carbon atom, you have the sigma-type lone pair or double or the HOMO, and the pi-type orbital is now lower in energy because it's stabilized due to the delocalization, which adds some aromatic character to the compound. Now, this is theory. What in experiment, what in chemistry could be the difference? But if you have one lone pair or two lone pair, then with one lone pair, you have a single Lewis base, and with two Lewis pairs, with two lone pairs, it should show the property of a double Lewis base. So why don't we look for complexes with two Lewis acids, and the easiest one is a proton. So we calculated the first and the second proton affinity of carbodiphosphoranes for the different substituents which are known. Let's just focus on this one because synthetically it's easiest to handle.
And this is the first proton affinity, very, very high, very high basic compound in comparison to the N-heterocyclic carbene. This is a carbene, not much higher, but the second proton affinity clearly distinguishes this compound, 185 kcal per mole, and here it's 104 or 70 kcal per mole. This is a nearly a qualitative difference. And this very large difference between the second proton affinity, that is what distinguishes a carbone from a carbene. Now that's a proton. And actually, we looked in the literature and we found very often that in the literature it was already known, but it has been hidden somewhere. For example, this doubly protonated carbodiphosphorane were found in some acta crystallographica. We couldn't find it. It's easy. Actually, it is difficult to get rid of the proton, not to get the proton added to it. What was not known, however, was that complexes which added classical, normal, main group Lewis acids. One or two. A few examples were known with one Lewis acid, but none of them with two Lewis acids. So we calculated with one or with two BH3, BCl3, and aluminum trichlorides. Those are model compounds, so this is not very easy to handle, but let's just focus on this. So we find very strong, as expected, very strong complexes with those three. All of them are in the meantime known, all this. Due to our calculation with BH3, it should even be possible to isolate it with two. Why not with this and not with this? Well, although they are stronger bonded with the first one, very easy to explain. It has a steric repulsion between the two Lewis acids. Boron trichloride and aluminum trichloride are more bulky than two BH3. So with BH3, it should be possible. So since it's an easy experiment, you just take carbodiphosphorine, take U2B2H6, and let it react. And that's what Pax did, and he immediately got this one. But this one was very, very difficult. So the student got frustrated, and I kicked him. I said, see, he says that it should be possible, and he finally succeeded, indeed. And this was now a prediction which we made, and he found it, but with an interesting twist in it, because if you count the hydrogens at the border, you find 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth is behind, the sixth is missing, because the overall structure is a cation. So what happens during the reaction, that is our assumption, we cannot prove it, that the B2H6 first adds in this way, but then it loses an H minus, and this H minus is how that reacts with an excess of B2H6 forming the B2H7N ion, and the B2H7N ion is actually the anion in the structure. But this is the one which was one, and this is a compound which is the result of a prediction. It's not the only one which came out of this picture. The next compound is just an example that an unusual compound can be understood. The bonding situation can easily be understood in the light of our of this bonding situation. Here you have a trication, a silver plus, and its bonding, you see the carbodiphosphorane again, one lone pair to a proton and the other lone pair to the silver. One lone pair to a proton and the other to the silver. Triply charged species, very, very stable, easy to understand. Another thing which is easy to understand in the light of the bonding situation is the charge separation. Let's just focus on the atomic partial charges at carbon. In the neutral, cation, dication, trication. Carbon carries minus 1.43 electrons. That makes sense. It keeps the four electrons, and all the electronic charge from the phosphorus atoms, which means 0.7 electrons from each lone pair. Chemically, it makes sense. It's interesting, when you protonate one of the lone pairs, it still has a negative charge of minus 1.33, because from one lone pair, the charge goes to the proton. But at the same time, the carbon, which is a donor to the proton, becomes a stronger acceptor to the phosphorus. So the phosphorus donates more charge to the carbon, which on the other side gives it to a proton. And the same happens to this, minus 1.07, the same happens to this. This is a trication, a triply positively charged species. Both carbon atoms have a negative charge of minus 1.34. Sounds crazy, but in the light of this bonding situation, it perfectly makes sense. We looked at other examples, others with the general formula Cl2. We looked in the literature, yes, you can substitute Pr3 by Co, and still bent by 145 degree, made in 66. You can substitute it by two COs. More than 100 years ago, was isolated by Otto Diels from the Diels-Alder reaction. Carbon suboxide, an unusual molecule, because it is not perfectly linear, it's quasi-linear. It has a bending angle of about, in the gas phase, of about 165 degrees.
people have always been wondering, well, why is it bent? Because it has those beautiful double bonds. Very easy. Because in this situation, it still is, if it profits from the strong bond in the CO, and then it has donor acceptable. But all of these compounds were known. As a theoretician, you would like to make predictions for compounds which are not known and which then hopefully can be made. And we thought about, well, PR3 as a ligand, that we are coming from transition metal chemistry, we know a lot about ligands, is a ligand which has been compared very often in its donor properties with the carbenes, with the aryl carbenes.
So, what about having as a ligand a carbene? That would give a carbon-carbon donor acceptor bond. Very unusual type of compound, and that was not known. So we published a paper, we worked on it, that was published in 2007, where we compared the carbodiphosphorane with carbodicarbenes, a new class of compounds. And if you look closer to it, you see here you have a nitrogen, here nitrogen, nitrogen, nitrogen. It's like a tetraamino substituted CCC. It could also be considered as a tetraaminoalane, if you wish so. Well, tetraaminoalanes were known in the literature, and I'll come back to this in a moment. But first, let's see how this looks like. Does this carbon, when it's attached to these aryl carbenes, does it look like this, bent, or does it look like this? The calculation says it looks like just like the carbodiphosphoranes. The bending angle of 125.8 degree refers when you have to the system where you have hydrogen, 132 degree when you have a methyl group, which is usually used in experiment, 132 degree, this other way. So we went ahead and published it. It was accepted immediately in Animal Chemie. It was published online. And then I got an email from Guy Bertrand, the person who in 1998 made the first stable carbene. Dear Gernot, I just discovered your new paper in Angewandte. I'm just finishing the paper with the experimental observation of your prediction. Here's the X-ray crystal structure of your compound, or more exactly, the derivative of it. This was our compound, and this was the one which he made, and which appeared shortly after our ones. The derivative is that he has a benzoannulated structure. Benzoannulated here one, we calculated in the meantime, it hardly has any effect on this core structure, which has a bending angle of 135 degree, we get 132 degree. Compare this distance with this distance, you can't do better than this. Well, other people started this. Actually, right now, a very, very hot field in synthetic chemistry. The group of Alice Fürstner, together with Manuel Alcarazo from Spain, he's working now on rehabilitation at the Max Planck Institute. A very, very talented chemist who's doing now rehabilitation. They looked on the mixed ligands, so carbon L1 and L2, L1 being the triphenylphosphine, and then you take L2, some other ligands. Take it triphenylphosphine itself, then you add carbodiphosphorate. But then use different carbenes. So they made these compounds with these different carbenes, and they studied the properties of them as ligands in metal complexes, which hopefully might have catalytic properties, which hopefully will be true, and then they will become rich. And hopefully it will give me some of the money because I had some ideas. Well, let's go back to theory. What about the orbitals, the frontier orbitals of this? What about the homo and the lumo of this? Because this is twisted. We looked at this. And indeed, the homo again is a pi type. The sigma is a sigma type. And the pi type has its largest coefficient at the central carbon atom, but you can see it's somewhat delocalized. Somewhat. So what about the first and second proton affinity? And here we run into a surprise. There is carbodicarbene, either with hydrogen or methyl here. First proton affinity, very high, even higher than in the carbodiphosphorane. Second proton affinity, somewhat lower. The two of them do not have to have the same trend, but still very, very high, much higher than in carbenes. The surprise came up when we went back and studied the alenes. The parent alene, first proton affinity 100 kcal less, second proton affinity actually doesn't exist. Now you go and take tetraaminoalanes. You substitute the hydrogens by amines, which are not cyclic like here, methyl or ethyl. With methyl, it is still linear. With ethyl, actually slightly bent. Look on the first proton affinity, we jump up by 100 kcal per mole, but more interesting is the second proton affinity. From zero, it jumps up to 150 and here even to 175 kcal per mole. Although this is quasi-linear, it has a higher second proton affinity than this. What does it mean? We studied it quite carefully. First of all, we found out the bending potential is extremely shallow. And say, just takes 2 or 3 kcal per mole to bend it. And then the lone pairs pop up. You don't see that in the linear structure. And if you protonate that, those second proton affinity, they all go to this carbon atom. They don't go to the lone pairs which show already up in the linear structure, not to the lone pairs of the nitrogen. The N-protonated species is higher in energy than the carbon-protonated one, but the lone pairs will show only up in the band because this is a hidden carbon in a way. Another surprise was when we went into the literature and we found a paper published in 1973. You see, by Fia and Gompa, which shows, and I'll read it to you because I have to see what. That's from 1973, and I think my die off.
Perfect.
That's a good organization. 1973, they published the first synthesis of exactly this tetraaminoalanine acid groups, which we just found in its slightly bent. And what did they find? They found that this compound react extremely readily and in good yields with carbon dioxide to give the stable adduct shown here. This is a CO2 adduct which reacts with this. That's exactly the starting point which we had for this carbon diphosphate. So different rules we came to this. This observation tells already something about this class of compound. In a 2004 review, this paper was mentioned. This chemistry has not been developed further during the last 3 decades. Sometimes you have just to see what they have found and people did not really recognize this. Let's go on. We published 2 large papers about the parent compounds and the complexes. You can read all about this. I've shown you that these free carbones have been made but have not been recognized. These carbones have also been we think that complexes of these carbones have also been made but have not been recognized. They have been called carbene complexes, but they are not. And here are a few examples. In 2000, Ron Cavell, a now retired professor in Canada, actually I met him a few weeks ago in Toronto at a conference and we had a very interesting discussion. He had made a beautiful set of compounds with the so-called pincer complexes. Now you see how he writes these pincer complexes. Here is a metal. In this case, hafnium and zirconium. Here's a carbon atom, and here you see already kind of a carbodiphosphorane, but this phosphor is substituted with an amine. And he writes it in such a way that the carbon has a double bond to the metal, and that there's a donor interaction from here to here. Well, there's something suspicious. Those of you who know something about carbene chemistry know that these carbenes are strong zinc pi acceptors. Metals like hafnium and zircons are not pi donors. They cannot really form carbene complexes like this. This is hafnium and zirconium. 1 year earlier, 1999, they also made the titanium compound. And here you see the X structure of this titanium compound. So titanium, dichloro, nitrogen, phosphorus, carbon, phosphorus like this. And now I want to show you what we think, how the bonding situation is. And the focus is this carbon atom. If it is a carbene, then it has a formally empty p pi orbital, which may get some charge. But where should the charge come from? This is not a good pi donor. This is not. Titanium has only 4 electrons. Where does it come from? We calculated the molecules. This is the original compound. And in order to make life easier, we cut off the phenyl. It's not absolutely necessary we did it. First of all, this bond distance are in good agreement with the experiment. We checked it. So we took this as a parent compound, where we just have hydrogen. And here's now the carbon atom. And let's have a look on the orbitals of the carbon atom. There's the HOMO, and there's the HOMO minus 1. And what do we found in the HOMO? A beautiful p pi lone pair orbital at the carbon. And here you find the HOMO minus 1, the lone pair orbital at the carbon now donating into the titanium. This carbon atom is a carbon and not a carbene. Another class of compounds, Sjöthara in Essen, he's now in Groningen, actually, he moved. He made similar complexes. He also called them carbene complexes with calcium. Now calcium cannot be a 5-HEC donor. And we calculated. And also in this complex, they can doubly donate. Look, he isolated this compound and you easily recognize the substituted carbodiphosphorane where the two lone pairs donate into the calcium. These are carbone complexes, not carbenes. Very recently, and that is now accepted in Angewandte Chemie, we predicted a new class of compounds with these ligands, where you have a group 13 element from aluminium to indium with a CP star. I will rush through this. You see a classical structure, 102 degree aluminium compound. We know why this angle is a bit more acute. We have a classical CP ring with an eta 5 coordinated system. All of the carbon-carbon distance are nearly the same. Look on the first and the second proton affinity, the second one, 191. Look on the frontier orbitals, the HOMO and the HOMO minus one, the familiar lone pair orbitals. The same with gallium, with indium. This interesting detail, they tend towards eta 3 bonded. The carbon distances here are different. This is a neat little detail which I will not discuss here. I discussed it in the paper, but the second proton affinity I want to point out very, very high. These are another class of carbones not yet synthesized. Is this restricted to carbon? What about the heavier analogs? About silicon, germanium, tin, lead? Actually, I'm right now writing the paper, it follows the same line. Again, let's look at the literature. 2003, Kira published a paper in which he said that this is the first example of a trisilar allane, bending angle 135 degrees. Immediately ring a bell, 135 degrees, it's like carbodiphosphate, it's like carbodicarbene. Is this really an allane or is it a silyl donated system with an isolated silicon atom? Let's look at the frontier orbitals, and here we are. The interesting thing is that his compound doesn't have a heteroatom here. Well, that's a big difference. So we compared all of them. This, then the silicon with a hetero and without a heteroatom. In all cases, you find the HOMO pi type orbital, the largest coefficient here. The HOMO minus one here, this HOMO minus three or HOMO minus two because we have silicon bonds. But we do find lower line sigma type orbitals, which are lone pairs at the central atom. So again, we have two lone pair orbitals. So let's have a look at the first and the second proton affinity. Here for carbon, and you see that the second proton affinity from here to here drops from 148 to 87 when you have an heteroatom, and when you don't, in case of silicon, from 142 only 129. The second proton affinity is much higher than this. Also, these compounds bind two BH3 molecules. They don't. A big difference. So we had two papers on the silicon and the series up to tin on this series of compounds. And I just want to show you that, according to our calculations, they all are not allenes. This is Kira's compound with 135 bending angle, which has a very large substituent. If you remove it and you go to the parent compound, which is this one, look what happens to the angle. It becomes 76 degrees. This is not an allele. If you have a heteroatom, actually it doesn't play much of a role. It's an interesting thing why it doesn't play a role in the heavy atoms, but it does for the carbons. That is something which I can later discuss. Here we have in the center a carbon atom, but silicon is donors. Here we have this system, and these, all of them are strongly bent. What about their properties? First, proton affinities, quite high, particular Kira's compound, but there is a qualitative difference between this silicon in the center and carbon in the center. The proton is attached to the sigma lone pair. According to our calculation, the proton in the silicon first goes to the pi lone pair, and that's a clear prediction which Kira can check because he has his compound in his hand, and the first proton affinity is very, very high. It should easy to protonate it, and then he could look where the proton is. According to our calculation, it's in the pi direction. What about the second proton affinity? In all of these cases, quite high numbers, particularly in Kira's compound, 187 kcal per mole. This is not a tricyclic allene. This is what we call a silylone. What about BH3 binding? It does bind first one BH3, and an interesting thing is, does it bind a second BH3? Yes, it even binds it stronger than the first one. This is the second binding energy, the binding energy to a second BH3, 48 kcal per mole, 36, and I go back, 40 kcal per mole in 23. In the other cases, it's not that dramatic, but they all bind a second BH3, sometimes even stronger than the first one, an effect which in the meantime we also understand. So we propose that there is a new class of compounds, and in relation to these divalent element two compounds, ulidane, we propose that they should be considered as divalent A0 compounds, ulidone, which means a carbene is a carbone from a silylane, that would be a silylone, germylone, stanylone, and plumbylone. Summary. Divalent carbon-0 compounds possess two ligand-to-carbon donor acceptor bonds to a bare carbon atom. The molecules are very strong donors and exhibit a peculiar chemical behavior which can be understood in the light of the bonding situation. These divalent carbon-0 compounds, these carbones, differ from carbanes by the number of lone pair orbitals at carbon. Carbones are pi donors while carbanes are weak pi acceptors. Chemically quite important. The actual bonding situation of a carbon compound may exhibit an intermediate situation between the two cases. Divalent carbon-0 behavior may even be found in formerly tetravalent compounds such as tetraaminoalates, which we call hidden carbones. And finally, divalent A0 compounds are also stable for heavier group 14 elements. The alleged tricyclo-alenes and trigamma-alenes are examples for divalent A0 compounds EL2. And as a final remark to this one, well, we are right now working heavy on, we go to the group 15 element, and it seems that it holds also there, and there are even some surprising results. Well, I have to thank my co-workers. Those ones in red participated and worked on this project, and particularly Wolfgang Petz and Guy Bertrand. It's a great pleasure to work with experimentalists who contribute and give you ideas, and at the same time I give it back and forward. It's a very, very great pleasure. That all was a lot of application. Let, as a final minute, tell you that we also do something in, actually now in method development. I would like to introduce to you the GFS-RPM method. It's quite complicated, so I will not go into the mathematical details. It's a semi-empirical method. It used to be the generalized function screened repulsive polarization model method, quite important, but we recently used it in a different way. We found it quite helpful also for other aspects. So the GFS-RPM method can also be used as a Gernot-Fracking-Soccer result prediction method. Very, very helpful, and as I said, in the qualitative, the formula are extremely complicated. The computer had to run for weeks and for weeks, so I will not bother it. I will just show you how good it is. So the performance of the method, how is it? Well, let's see. England against Germany. What was the theory? 1-2-4. Experiment, 1-2-4. Argentina against Germany. It said 0-4. What was experiment? 0-4. It was incredible. And I said, my student, we have to draw a correlation line. He said, fantastic. R1.000, this is one of the best methods which we ever had. So now we think we can go into the prediction. And today it's at Spain against Germany. What does this method say? I'm very sorry, it says... Well, experiment, you all will watch it. The result will become available during the conference dinner tonight, so you can tell about it. As a small caveat, any method, of course, has a well-defined error margin. And also so has mine. So the error margin of this is -5 each direction. So you will see tonight how good this method is. And now the very final to you, because while you are approaching an age, and I'm also not that far away from it, and sometimes I dream about and what will go, and I don't know how it will be, but I have a picture for this, which I have been shown in the past, and that is my idea how it hopefully will go.
Ramon, I think the day will come when we might perhaps in this way look back to the good old days. Whenever it will be, I don't know, because I think it's not important how old you grow. It's important how you grow old, and I hope we will do it in a way which we will anyway happily look together back.
Well, with all of this, I want to thank you for this, and I will gladly answer any question except for my GFSPI. Thank you.
Chemical and
sucker
insights.
Prediction
for the final.
Okay.
Okay. Accepting this.
Yes.
That's fun. We go over time. Germany does a lot. It will go over time, and I think the last minute will be 4-3 Germany. Extremely tight. It might even be penalty. It might even be going to come.
Okay. Over there.
I wonder if you can put a different secret speaking in this divalent carbon compounds, because if you have a very small secret speaking, this could be an indication that this actually won't have carbon electrons, won't actually feel very comfortable being placed in a double orbital, and might be able to speak to the secret radical.
Yeah, no. The secret speaking actually, as you would say, it's extremely high, because as soon as you excite it to a triplet, one of the electrons goes into those orbitals which are used as an acceptor for the PR3, and the PR3 goes off. It actually doesn't have stable triple state. It kicks off the one of the ligands. Don't forget, you have two lone pair orbitals. Now you make a triplet. What happens? One of the electrons from these two orbitals goes to one of those which are used as an acceptor orbital for the PR3. The PR3 goes off, it dissociates.
The orbitals relax as well.
Pardon?
The orbitals relax in the cross as well.
They relax as well. And in fact, we have a few ligands which stay, but the bond gets either got much longer or they dissociate.
Yeah. Further questions? So this is not okay. So then, thanks once again.